This is the Cubs-related podcast presented by CubsInsider.com. My name is Corey. I am joined, as always, by Brendan. We are coming to you on a Sunday afternoon, a beautiful Sunday afternoon, wherever you may be for Cubs fans, as the Cubs sweep the Milwaukee Brewers in a four-game set at Wrigley Field, allowing two runs the entire weekend, three shutouts for the Cubs pitching staff. It was everything we wanted and more from the pitching staff. The offense does just enough to get the job done, and a wonderful weekend at Wrigley Field for the Cubs. We will recap those four games, talk about our players of the series, some trends we're liking, read some good quotes from the series, and then we will preview the upcoming series still at Wrigley Field. But for now, let's do a quick recap of these Cubs-Brewers games. Not a lot to discuss. The Cubs don't score a lot of runs, but they score enough. And like I said, the Brewers only scoring in one of these games. So on Thursday, the Cubs win 1-0. Kyle Hendricks, it's the game of Kyle's. Brendan. Kyle Hendricks with seven shutout innings, only allowing four hits, five strikeouts, no walks. The only run in the game, a Kyle Schwarber home run. Carl Edwards Jr. and Brandon Morrow shut things down. That's about it. Seven hits for the Cubs, six for the Brewers. On Saturday, the Brewers actually scoring runs in this game. Good for them. Yu Darvish with six strong. He gives up a run, but it is unearned. Eight strikeouts, two walks in six innings. The Cubs getting offense from Anthony Rizzo driving a run in. And Javi Baez also driving a run in. They win this one 3-2. Pedro Strop picking up the win in this game as the Cubs get the final run in the seventh inning on an error by Eric Sogard that allows Addison Russell to score again. 3-2, your final on Friday. On Saturday, the Cubs winning 3-0 behind the arm of Jose Quintana. Seven shutout innings for him, seven strikeouts, one walk, only two hits allowed. He continues to dominate the Milwaukee Brewers going back to last year, but this year 13 innings of shutout ball against the Brew Crew. The Cubs getting offense again from guess who? Javi Baez with a double that scores a run, and Tommy La Stella blooping a single in the seventh that scores Ben Zobrist. Jason Hayward with some very, very key base running there, taking advantage of some lazy defense in the outfield from the Brewers. Cubs win 3-0. And today, more of the same. Tyler Chatwood goes seven shutout innings. Stop me if you've heard this before, Brendan. kind of sounds like I'm recapping the same game over and over again. Seven shutout innings from Tyler Chatwood. Two hits, three walks, four strikeouts. Got that strikeout rate above the walk rate, which we talked about. And Brandon Morrow, again, locking down his seventh save. Carl Edwards Jr., again, with the hold. And the two Cubs runs coming on a Tyler Chatwood single. He helps himself. And an Addison Russell sack fly. And that was it. Again, only two hits for the Brewers today. So I will turn this over to you, Brendan. You can give us your player of the series. But not much else you can say about this. This is about as, without the offense scoring 10 runs a game, this is about as good and clean of a four-game series as you can see.
Yeah, this great baseball all around. I made the comment to you that this was just an enjoyable weekend of baseball. The Cubs didn't make really any mishaps, no defensive miscues. The at-bats, even though they didn't score many runs, were still, I thought, pretty good. Everyone was taking their pitches and just they had an idea of what they wanted to do at the plate. As far as my player of the series goes, there's honestly not one player that stands out for me. You can go with the pitching, which I think ultimately will have to be kind of like the theme of the series. But one player, I guess, who should be in the running probably is, which is good, Addison Russell. He went 4-for-8 this series, Corey. I know he didn't play in that Saturday contest, but went 4-for-8. He was instrumental in the games he did play. For example, the Sunday game, which was the last game of today's series, he went 2-for-2, had a walk or had a sack fly, had a triple down the right field line, had a nice single in his first at-bat, and he scored one of the go-ahead runs, I believe, in the second game of the series. So he was involved a lot, and defensively, he made a few nice plays to his glove side. One particular play where he kind of went on one knee and had that trademark backhanded stab to snag a liner. He just looks good. With a lot of players returning from injury that the Cubs have, like KB and Zobrist, there's going to be some player timing issues that we're going to have to sort out, which we'll get into on this podcast. But I think Addison does deserve the player of the series for this weekend.
Yeah, so Addison looked good. It's been an interesting season so far from him because it seems really visible when things are going well for him and when they're not, which might sound obvious, I guess, but he just looked better. Today, all the balls he hit were well struck. He looked poised and confident. And, you know, on that triple, he gets a ball on the outer portion of the plate, goes with it, rips it down the right field line, just looks good. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's just in contrast to what we had seen, you know, over the past couple weeks where, you know, he was chasing a little bit more, just didn't look very comfortable up there. I know you mentioned, you know, maybe messing with some of his swing mechanics and stuff. But this weekend looked good. So hopefully we can build on that and keep going. I'm going to cheat a little bit here and do a group of people as my player of the series, but I it's the starting pitching. A clinic from the Cubs starting pitching staff. I'm going to read a stat here that you sent me. 27 innings pitched, 11 hits, 0 earned runs, the one run, you know, coming on an error. 6 walks and 24 strikeouts for the Cubs starters in this series.
And 3 of those walks came from Chatwood today, so you take away today's start. They just did not allow people on base here, Corey.
Right, and, you know, really not a lot of hard contact for the Brewers, not a lot of particularly scary moments in this series. And, you know, we talked about this coming in, about needing to see more from the starters, particularly Darvish, who was very good in his outing. And this is just what you want to see. Obviously, John Lester, the lone pitcher, not going in this series, but really hard to ask for more from anybody else. You know, we're seeing good strikeout totals, the walk totals mitigated, even for Tyler Chatwood today. He started off the game looking kind of like we were going to get another one of those wild ride starts, but he really settled in there. And, you know, he is a pitcher that has a high ground ball rate. He does have a profile that lends itself to getting ground balls. And you see that sometimes. Sometimes he works himself into trouble, but he gets that pitch and gets it to Russell or Baez, and they can turn the double play.
And that happened today in the seventh, right? He walks a guy, gets a nice 2-0 pitch after Hickey comes out, and he gets a double play because of that.
Yeah, so this was really strong from the Cubs pitching staff. There's really not much more to say. I mean, the Milwaukee offense did not do anything against Cub pitching in this series, and you know, you had everybody going to at least the sixth inning. Hendricks and Quintana both going seven, and then Chatwood going seven as well. Darvish, the lone pitcher, not to go seven. So
through six, though. So I mean, really
right through six. Yeah. So you know, there's really just not much else to say about how good they were in this series. And it very impressive, you know, for a Milwaukee offense that has a lot of very talented bats, you know, has certainly seen, you know, obviously with some of the new guys, not as much, but, you know, they've seen Hendricks a decent amount over the years. Even now they've seen Quintana several times.
They still can't do anything against Quintana either.
I mean, Quintana just owns the Milwaukee Brewers. you know, even going back to that big start he had in the that September series at Miller Park last year. But like I mentioned in the open, 13 innings against the Brewers so far this year and 0 runs. So always nice when you can, you know, make a big trade for a pitcher and he seems to dominate someone in your own division.
Which pitcher stood out for you, though? So we have 4 guys who played pretty well, but in one, I guess if there's one guy from which to choose, who would you pick as the most impressive from the weekend?
I was very well, you know, I mean, I think again, you know, watching Quintana dominate the Brewers has not gotten old yet in the few times we've seen it. But I, as far as what stood out to me, it was Kyle Hendricks. Just really nice to see him go deep into a game like that, striking out 5, no walks, you know, just to see that kind of vintage Kyle Hendricks. Right. Obviously, you know, the early portion of the season wasn't exactly what he wanted. It wasn't terrible, but not what he would, you know, be hoping for. So it was just good to really see him go out there, 7 strong, shut out, you know, a few hits here and there, but overall, you know, kind of your classic Kyle Hendricks start. Yeah.
I think for me is probably Q. I had no reservations about Darvish turning it around. I was pretty clear about that. Q was a little interesting, though, because his velocity was down about a mile and a half to start the year. But the start against Milwaukee and the previous one against Colorado, he looks like his old self. And that one start against Milwaukee, like filthy pitches. He was locating mostly everything. He's working the top of the zone. He's going left side, right side with his two-seamer and four-seamer, pinpointing everything. The curveball was exceptional, I thought. And so that was classic Quintana. I think that was his best start of the year by far.
When he looks, he's an interesting guy because I think he's not necessarily super demonstrative, but I think you can read his body language a little bit. Like, and when he's feeling it, and he's, you know, really got that touch and he's hitting the edges, he perks up a little bit on the mound, and he looks a little more aggressive. And, you know, again, we talked about this going into the year about how he talked about this was his year to finally rack up those win totals and stuff like that. And he's a guy who you can really see when it's going for him and he's feeling it. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not Pedro Strop levels of demonstrative, but you can tell when he's feeling it and he's really vibing his performance, if you will. And he certainly was in this series against Milwaukee.
And I want to point out, too, with that Hendricks start, because that was obviously extremely good. Hendricks, too, has been throwing fast in the early going here. He's averaging over 88 miles per hour his last three starts out here, Corey. Like, that's basically his career norm. This is coming off a year where he only averaged about 85.5 to 86. So the Cubs are hitting their stride. Like, their pitching is hitting their stride, I mean. And the one thing I said in the previous podcast was, I want deep starts. I want the Cubs to go deep. I want them to get back on track to match the hitting. And we saw it. This was the ideal performance from this group as a whole. And we didn't see John Lester, but I think John has looked pretty decent his most recent few starts as well. Mm-hmm. So this is good, Corey. We're progressing through. We're getting these pitchers back on track. The weather's going to start warming up here soon. Our guys are getting healthy. This is a really good point in the season right now for the Cubs as a whole.
Yeah, and this has been a good stretch for the Cubs, you know, over the last few weeks here. And save for the offense, you know, scoring 6-7 runs in each of these games, this series did at times have a little bit of, you know, not to get ahead of myself here, but a little bit of that 2016 feel, right? Yeah. Where the starting pitching is totally dominant. The Cubs are making big plays on defense and on the bases. I mentioned that Hayward play. That Hayward play is brilliant. And an example of when he's not going necessarily at the plate, he's still such a valuable asset out there. And that's why people preach about, you know, if he can get it going at the plate, even at a league average level, he's such a valuable player. But for him to, you know, not only did he read the LaStella bloop and he was already almost at third, right? Mm-hmm. He knew that ball was getting down. But the minute, I don't recall who was playing left field in the game for the Brewers, but the minute that he looked at like second base and put the ball in his glove, you know, taking just a second, not paying attention, Hayward was scampering home. He was like, I'm scoring on this play. You also saw it with Baez, when the catcher Pena tried to back pick him at second base, Baez just walks to third. It was, you know, and they're making good plays in the outfield.
And the Almora, you know, too, on the pop-up. He scored from first base in the pop-up. I forgot.
Right.
I forgot who hit that pop-up. It's escaping me now, but that should not go unnoticed either. These are the Cubs taking advantage of the Brewers' mishaps, and sometimes you don't take advantage of that, but they did.
Almora, you know, Schwarber lost a ball in the sun, Almora ranging as far as he could from center field to make sure that the play was made. Like, you know, these guys, the offense wasn't as explosive, but, you know, you figure that's going to come, especially with Chris Bryant getting back in there. We know Anthony Rizzo will heat up at some point. Wilson Contreras still needs to heat up a little bit, but the pitching was dominant. The bullpen continues to be a major asset for this team. You know, we've said it before, but Brandon Morrow, what a treat to watch. He just is not messing around
out
there. 7
saves now here, Corey.
3 in this series.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this, again, save for scoring as many runs as possible, this series goes about as well as it could. And, you know, this was a Milwaukee team riding an 8-game winning streak when they came to Wrigley Field. Cubs send them out with a 4-game losing streak. Sorry about it, Milwaukee. And the Cubs, you know, doing some Twitter savagery to the Brewers, who getting a little big for their britches there with their 0 World Series rings, talking some trash. So kudos to @Cubs on that. They always get the better of the internet trolls like the Milwaukee Brewers. But want to move on to our quotes of the series. You know, we'll continue breaking things down here. But for my quote, I'll start with my quote, if you don't mind, Brendan. I am going to read one from Chris Bryant after he got back in on, what was that, Friday's game? He makes his return to the lineup. No, Saturday's game.
Saturday, yeah. Sorry. With Silver's coming back the same day.
Yes. Yeah. Good to see both of them. But just this quote from Bryant. Just another ball game. I felt completely normal. It's weird when you take 4 days off. You feel like you're a little behind. But that was the only thing. I wasn't as sharp as I had been. I felt great. And, you know, not a particularly explosive or necessarily insightful quote, but I felt like that was my quote of the series and, you know, maybe of the season so far. And, you know, naturally I wouldn't expect Chris to be, you know, forthcoming if he did feel something was a little off. I don't know that he would say that to the media, but this was just good to hear. It was a scary situation last Sunday, and one that, you know, we all know, and Chris made mention of this as well, that, you know, a couple inches a different way, or, you know, he doesn't react even as quickly as he did, which was a last-minute move. You know, we're having a different conversation here. So I thought he looked good out there. He looked comfortable. And
looked
just good to see him.
Too.
Yeah, just good to see him out there. He didn't look hesitant or anything like that. And again, you know, not a quote that's going to light the world on fire here, but just good to hear him say that he feels good and that, you know, he just needs to readjust to having not played baseball in 4 days. But other than that, he's, you know, not experiencing anything. And, you know, hopefully we can put that incident behind us, though the Rockies do come to town. So we'll see if it's completely behind us.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, it was just good to see him out there, good to hear him talking and sounding confident, normal, and happy to be out there.
And he has this new C-flap on his helmet, too, which is nice to see. He gets extra protection. So he joins Hayward, Baez, and Almora, all three of those guys, now with Bryant, to wear the C-flap. Hayward actually got hit in the face, I think, in 2012 or 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Very similarly, more so towards the jaw area, but a really scary, scary scene from Hayward. So I wonder if those two have talked a little bit about advice, you know, going back to the plate, just dealing with the post effect of getting hit in the face. But yeah, like you, Corey, it's good to see KB back. It's fun now to see Zobrist back as well and see how this entire team can shape up. This is the first time I think everyone's been completely now on the same page here. So it'll be fun to see going forward. My quote of the series is a rather large one from Joe Maddon, but it kind of encompasses where the Cubs are at right now. And I want to preface this quote, too, with the rumors of Manny Machado. So John Heyman of FanRag Sports mentioned that the Cubs may be the front runner in the early going here in this Manny Machado sweepstakes that's bound to happen this July for the trade deadline. Not much was given by John Heyman in that piece, but he's just kind of almost guessing based on what he's hearing that the Cubs may be of interest to
Manny
Machado.
Well, and worth noting that the Orioles are already like 13 games out.
Yeah,
their division is loaded. So I think that's why this conversation is picking up steam here.
Right. And I bring that up only because we saw Addison Russell get a day off on Saturday in favor of Ben Zobrist at second base and Javi moving to shortstop. So Maddon was asked actually about Addison Russell's playing time, and this has no particular context in the Manny Machado stuff as it relates to Maddon, but nevertheless, just throwing it all in here to create this entire picture. So Maddon was asked, kind of, will Baez and Addison and all these guys, will Addison be thrown into that matrix of decisions of whether or not he plays every day? And Maddon says, quote, "I'm not looking at that right now. Addison looks good to me. I think he's moving really well. He's gotten even better on the bases. He's throwing as good as I've seen him ever." So there's a lot of positives with Addison right now. And then Maddon went on to further say, quote, "I just think he's like a click off right now. There's nothing I can tell you that is horrible. I think he's just missing his pitch a little bit. But overall, I'm kind of happy where he's at. I think he looks physically good. He's moving well. He's running well. He's throwing well. Who knows how much the cold weather plays a part in this? I am fine with where Addy's at right now." So, Corey, I bring this up too. Javi's, you know, he's doing his thing this year. He's tops in major leagues in almost every offensive category. He's going to have to play almost every day. At the same time, though, Albert Almora continues to play well. He continues to provide a little bit of a stability at top of the order with Javi, batting leadoff. And he has a 341 wOBA right now. And then you look at Zobrist, who comes back. Zobrist was on fire before that back flare-up. He had a 380 wOBA. Jason Hayward has a 327 wOBA. He's providing value on the bases defensively. So it's going to be a little bit of a challenge to fit in all these players, I think, in the lineup. And Addison right now, he's not performing up to, I think, a lot of people's expectations. He's a 283 wOBA right now. Regardless, though, you see games like today's game where Addy looks good. He's had a weird season where he's off, he's on, he's off, he's on. So you don't know. So I want to bring this up, and I think it's worth talking about how this entire mesh will end up looking over the next few weeks. But Corey, just give me your general thoughts here on Addison and just where the Cubs are now that everyone else is healthy.
Well, as everyone knows, you and I are both very pro Addison Russell. Yes. And, you know, even with his, what does he come out of this game with? He comes out of today with a 636 OPS. It raised a lot this weekend.
That one triple will do wonders.
Yeah. And, you know, but look, I'm not surprised to hear these rumors. Like I said, with the Orioles so far out, and, you know, they're not just going to let Machado leave and collect the draft pick. They're going to try to move him. Yeah. It's natural that the Cubs would come up, I think, as a lot of competitors will come up. Anybody that, you know, may be in the market to sign him in the offseason, you know, or add that big free agent bat, probably going to be looking at doing it now if you can, and, you know, maybe get a jump on the extension, whatever. But this is one of those things where I'll believe it when we see some, you know, real smoke in this fire. This feels like Heyman just sort of suggesting that the Cubs might be a match, you know, and look, like, who wouldn't take Manny Machado in their lineup? I think we talked about this when this issue came up in the offseason. Like, duh, right? I mean, like, do you want Manny Machado? No, we're okay. No, of course you do. But as we discussed in the offseason, the thing is going to be, even if you were looking at this, you know, is there a possibility that you can sign him long-term? Do you want to sign him long-term, or would you rather have Bryce Harper? I'd rather have Bryce Harper. I get the feeling that the Cubs would, too. And, you know, what are you giving up? I don't get the sense that this would be something where, even if it was Russell, you'd be talking like a Machado for Russell straight-up situation. And then you're getting into a whole nother thing of, okay, how many years of control are we trading for Russell? Who else is being thrown in? You know, because if it's something like, and again, this is all hypothetical. It's April. Who knows if there's real stuff to this? Though, you know, Heyman's a prominent national writer. So when this comes up, that's why we end up talking about it, because this isn't some nobody throwing this out there.
Yeah, he's up there with, you know, the Ken Rosenthal's and the John Morosi's of the world.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're talking about Russell and really anything beyond that, it's already too much for me. Again, I'd love to have Manny Machado in the lineup. I'd love him to play whatever position he wants. It'd be great. Like, their lineup would be more insane than it is now. But, you know, again, if you don't know how long you're going to keep him, if you don't know if you even want to keep him in lieu of some of the other free agents available, it just gets to be like, how much are you giving up? This team is already really good. How much better are they with Manny Machado?
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know where that moves the needle from.
The Cubs are projected
as far as where they are.
They're projected to win 96 games by Baseball Prospectus. That's going to win the division. So the value right that you give up, is it worth it? Is it worth giving up 3.5 years of team control for Addison Russell, who turned 24 like 6 weeks ago?
Yeah.
He's barely older than Ian Happ, and he's top 20 in WAR since 1945 for shortstops. Granted, most of that is driven by defense, but at the same time, you can't ignore that defense. He's
right,
one of the best defenders in the league.
Yeah, and look, I know that you and I, you know, whether he hits the ceiling or doesn't, you and I are going to go down as either the people that were with him, you know, since day one and stuck with him through the hard times, or the idiots that, you know, wouldn't let this go. And I'm fine with that. And look, it's natural for people to be frustrated with his offensive performance. You know, he's been up in the league since, what, May of 2015?
Yeah.
And we really haven't seen him, you know, reach that ceiling for a sustained period of time. So I get it. But like you said, the dude is 24. You know what you're getting on defense. That's going to continue to be there. And we just see these flashes. I'm not ready to cut bait on that, you know. And again, it's a tough thing because, again, in a vacuum, yes, I would love Manny Machado in this lineup right now, every day. That'd be fantastic. But when you get into what you'd have to give up and having to give up on people and maybe more than just Russell, I'm not into it. And, you know, I don't want to start a whole thing here, but Javi makes a lot of errors. He makes a lot of, you know, misplays in the field. And that's not a knock on Javi, but it's just to point out that, you know, Russell is a very good defender, and it's a luxury for the Cubs to have those two up the middle. If you get rid of Russell, then you have only Baez at short. You're getting worse at second base, markedly worse at second base, the drop-off from Baez to Zobrist or Happ or whoever it would be. And, you know, you're moving Javi to a more difficult position. And this is by no means to suggest that Javi's not a good defense player. He'd be a phenomenal shortstop,
of course,
right? He'd be one of the best shortstops in the league. But he makes more misplays than Russell does. When Russell's healthy and hitting those throws to Rizzo's chest, he's not really misplaying much, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, again, Baez, some of that is due to the fact that he's very aggressive. His range is better than more players. He's getting to more balls. You know, some of the errors you've seen this year, he's trying to, you know, throw a guy out by a step on some ball that he should barely be able to get to. But I'm just saying, and, you know, kind of to your point, it's not a wash to just, you know, move Baez over and get rid of Russell, right? That's a big change to this team that you're talking about, even if you're going from one, you know, elite shortstop to another one that's really close, right? There is a change. So I don't think that it's as simple, you know, as some people would look at it and go, oh, Russell for Machado, if the Orioles offered that, take it, move on, whatever. It's a nuanced thing. And again, I think the key here is how much are you improving the team right now and guaranteeing anything for the future? And I think if you made a move like this, you'd have a better offense. But, you know, how much is that really buying you right now?
That's the point I'm trying to make, too. With 96 wins of projected value, that's not going to move the needle that much. What, you get an extra win and a half? So you're around 97, 98? You don't know. And also, too, with Machado, he's clearly one of the most talented players in the league. I'm not denying that. But at the same time, he's not infallible either. Last year, he had a 3.28 wOBA, Corey. That was league average. 2016, pretty good year. 3.66 wOBA. 2015, 3.70 wOBA. These are good years, don't get me wrong. And when you add in the defense at third base, you know, the jury is still out with his shortstop defense, although it looks pretty good, I'm not going to lie. You just don't know. But that's kind of beyond the point here. The point is you get... You're trading 3.5 years of Russell for 2 months of Manny Machado in a playoff run, which may end up making sense, however the Cubs want to calculate that out. But at the same time, I'm uncomfortable doing that.
I just want to point out real quick here, just because I think it would be part of the argument that people would be making, you know, he's been on the Orioles, so it's not that big of a sample, and two of the series that he's played in were, you know, 6 years ago in 2012. But it's not like Machado is some sort of proven playoff legend, right? He's a career 174 hitter in what looks, I believe, three playoff series. One of them's a wild card game.
I'm not saying
Manny Machado isn't a good player in the postseason, but I'm saying if part of the argument is the Cubs offense has shown to be sometimes a little feast or famine in the playoffs, right, as we saw last year for sure, it's not like you're getting someone with 10 years of experience hitting 400 in the playoffs. Right. You're getting someone who we don't know. Maybe he doesn't perform in the playoffs. You know, you're not getting a proven commodity in that regard, which I think would be, you know, most of the reason to do it. Because like you said, it's really probably not moving the needle much as far as getting in the playoffs or winning the division is concerned. You'd be doing it so that your offense is loaded and not as inconsistent in the playoffs. And I don't think you're guaranteed that with Machado. We just don't have the numbers on that. And again, I'm not trying to judge him on 27 career plate appearances, 23 of which came 6 years ago. But that's also something to consider. He hasn't had many playoff games. You know, we don't know what he does on this big stage. Mm-hmm. So it's just not a sure thing that you're making this move for.
And that's the thing, too. You never know with players in the postseason. You know, Javi Baez came out of nowhere kind of in 2016 and left the stage on fire, right? And not many saw that coming. I mean, he was inserted at second base in that 2016 World Series run where he played third base predominantly that year. You just never know. But going back to how the Cubs' current situation looks right now, I do want to talk about this briefly here.
Sure.
Zobrist is back here, Corey. Now, Russell, like, fully admit he's looking weird at times. You have to keep Javi in the lineup somehow. So I'm fine with Maddon not playing Addy every day. Like, I'm fine with that. That makes sense. You get him going offensively. You play the matchups. You get his psyche going when you play those better matchups. And you get someone like Zobrist, who's performing exceptionally well right now. I'm cool with that. And I do want to give Amora a little bit more of a chance here. He's looking good. He didn't have any base hits today, but was an 11-game hit streak before today ended. He's looking
good. Yeah, him and Baez both had 11-game hitting streaks end today.
Yes. Yeah, so it'd be kind of...
Both hitting .292 also, right. Which is a little weird.
Yeah, Almago is in sync, basically.
Almago, yes.
But you just can't take them out on top of the lineup right now. You just can't do it. You're getting results. You're getting guys progressing developmentally. So it does make sense to not play Addison every day in favor of giving Zobrist a little bit more of a chance here. And it's going to be necessary to have Zobrist get few more plate appearances just to get going, just to see pitches. Like KB said, sometimes you need a few games to get going here. So I am fine with that. I do want to point that out. Like, I'm not saying, Maddon needs to play Addy every day. No, but at the same time, we have to get everyone going a little bit, and I understand everyone's frustrations with Addison Russell's offensive right now, so I get that, but doesn't mean you want to give up on the guy. So I don't know if that makes complete sense with what I'm trying to say right here, but at the same time, I recognize Addison's struggles. I do recognize he has a talent to get out of it, and I am okay with him getting a few more days off here just to get everyone else that consistent playing time.
Yeah, it's sort of a situation that we envisioned with this team, maybe a little different than we thought in the spring, because I think we thought that Ian Happ would be kind of the one sort of confusing this whole situation with, the way he was hitting in the spring. Obviously much the opposite now that we're in the regular season. But I think, really the one thing that I'm watching here is how Zobrist is used, because like you mentioned, he was hitting so well when before he had this back thing. And, we know he's going to find his way into the lineup. But like you said, I mean, I think I'm pretty comfortable with where things are. We're going to have to see how Joe does it. This team actually hasn't really been fully healthy for most of the year. No, right. No big injuries necessarily, but just not, everybody available
like Rizzo,
on every day.
Rizzo, Zobrist, and KB.
Yeah, I think there was a stat the other day that that Rizzo and Bryant have only played together in like half the games or something this year. Yeah. So it's been an interesting start to the season with kind of these little tweak injuries, if you will. But I'm fine with, continuing the Almago thing. I would say, I don't want to get too rigid with Almora being there. He still needs to prove himself against righties. And I think, with the way that Zobrist was playing, perhaps you might see him up top every now and again. But Javi Baez still has an OPS over 1,000. He continues to look good at the plate. He had an at-bat. I want to say it might have been in yesterday's game. It was one of these games this weekend where he struck out on like three pitches and he chased. And it was a very interesting at-bat because it was the exception so far this year rather than the rule. And an at-bat that we had become accustomed to seeing. But this year you really felt it. You were like, ah, come on, Javi, like you're better than that, which in years past he was not. Yeah. But this year you're really watching those at-bats where he's just chasing three straight pitches, and it's surprising to see. So, I would keep riding him up at the top of that order until he gives you a reason not to.
Yeah.
Look, I'm fine if they want to give Russell some days off, give Javi, one day off or 2 days off a week, whatever it is, mix and match these guys. I think it'll be fine. I mean, I think really the thing that stands out right now is that, with the way that some of these guys are playing, and, I'm not necessarily super thrilled about this, but at least for right now, it's going to be hard, I think, for Ian Happ to be cracking the lineup with regular play, because he continues to go in and out of just, he had a pinch hit at bat today that was terrible, and they're just going to have to get him going. And it's very hard to do with this team when you have guys, because right now it's like, are you going to put Almora on the bench? He's coming off an 11-game hitting streak. And he's, when you put him at the top of the order, this offense and this team really started getting going.
So I just, the field and center field too.
Right, yeah. He's playing tremendous defense in center field. And so it just is hard right now to see how Happ is going to get those at-bats, because you want him to. You want him to get those at-bats to try to get right. But when you have some of these other guys, especially some of these younger guys, you know, really sort of thriving right now, I'm struggling to see how it's gonna happen for Ian. And it'll be interesting to see how Joe continues to do that. But for right now, he would be my guy, where I would be, you know, looking to everyone else and making sure that, you know, guys like Almora, Schwarber are getting in there against their good matchups, and, you know, to keep them going. And if that's at the expense of Happ, it's unfortunate. But right now, Brendan, I don't know what else you do when he continues to have at bats where he just looks totally lost.
Yeah, it's challenging, Corey. It's challenging.
Especially because he's so young. And again, this is only his second year in the majors, his first full year on the team, like breaking camp with the major league team. But I don't know who you're, you know, moving in and out of the lineup in lieu of Ian Happ right now.
These things kind of work their way out, though. You know, like right now, it's still only April 29th. And This could be an entirely different conversation, as we all know. In 3 weeks, you know, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago,
sure,
we were talking about Schwarber looking kind of weird, right? And he just like almost instantly turns on a switch and is hitting lasers out of the ballpark. So these things, in my view, will work its way out. I actually would be surprised if by September we're looking at Almora and Baez consistently at 1-2. And at the same time, I actually wouldn't be blown away if that ends up happening. Just how baseball works. But
yeah,
I think by a point in the season, we're going to see someone struggle. We're going to see some guys maybe have a little bit general soreness that will need days off. And Happ is going to get his opportunities. He had last year, you know, like over 400, 450 plate appearances. He's going to get his time. I'm not necessarily concerned about playing time per se. I'm concerned about his ability to adapt, and I don't want to bring this up as me saying, oh, I think he should go to Iowa, but that actually might make sense here. And if this continues to happen for the next 3-4 weeks, he needs at-bats, right, to get the ship righted. So if he ends up going to Iowa, too, that wouldn't be a surprise, even though right now I don't think that's the best idea. If it were the best idea, he'd be there, so...
It's a tough spot.
Andy.
This is one of those spots where, you know, we preach it all the time, but this is where you really are happy to have Joe Maddon here, because this is a tough spot. You want to get this guy going. You want to have, you know, your young, you know, top draft pick, guy who's, you know, only in his sophomore season, getting those at-bats, getting him right. But you've got a lot of other people in this lineup that you have, you know, are in similar spots.
Right.
And, you know, especially when you have, you know, coming out of today's game, Schwarber with a 981 OPS, Baez again, you know, 2 points over 1,000. You know, it's tough to figure out where you're going to move these guys around. And, you know, even someone like Hayward, who OPS is only up to 734, but with Jason Hayward's got a 734 OPS with his defense and his base running, tough to sit him. Joe Maddon has ridden him through much worse stretches than that. So I would expect, you know, while he's, you know, creeping around that league average offense number, I'm not really expecting him to take many days off, though I was very angry at him for that strikeout with a runner on third today that he had to be picked up by Tyler Chatwood. But, you know, whatever. So I think we kind of, in that conversation, dug into some of the trends here. So if you'll allow it, Brendan, I would like to read a bonus quote.
I will allow it only for today, Corey, because we swept the Brewers here. I'll allow you to do that.
Okay. So I want to read from a piece that you wrote on CubsInsider.com. Only when it benefits me, only when I need it for something. And a quote from Yu Darvish and a quote from Joe Maddon about his start. And these are told to The Athletic, which is a subscription we recommend if you don't have it. They do really great coverage with Sadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Great staff over there. But Darvish says, Madden really takes care of me. He thinks a lot about me. In today's outing, there was a similar situation as the previous game, but because I spoke with Joe, I was able to overcome and kept going today. And then from Joe Madden, this concept that he doesn't compete is absolutely fabricated and false. Players with that special kind of ability, sometimes you just get out of your zone somehow, and you need to be reminded about a couple things. So I just thought, really good quotes there, and, you know, because we and, you know, obviously others more so than us have been tough on Darvish, you know, in the early going here, I just wanted to read those quotes, you know, because especially you and I talked about last week not really loving, you know, and that's putting it lightly, the way that, you know, the media was jumping all over him and, you know, diagnosing him from the press box as though they were, you know, sports psychologists about terrible. What's going on in Darvish's head and stuff like that. And we didn't like that. We did not like that one bit. So I like to hear this from Madden, like to hear it from Darvish. Obviously, especially when you have a big free agent acquisition like Darvish, and someone who has been in the league for a while, who has, you know, played for different teams and different leagues, you love hearing the way he talks about Joe Madden. You know, again, he's not going to go in the media and trash him, but you just love to hear players like that. He's only been working with Joe Madden for a couple months, you know, saying, like, this guy really cares about me. I like playing for him. They clearly have a good relationship already, one that, you know, Madden can talk to him and get him going in the middle of a start. So a lot to, I think, like from these quotes. And, you know, it was these quotes were coming after, you know, again, a very strong start for Darvish of 6 shutout innings, 2 walks, 8 strikeouts. And he was very good, and he looked very good. And so I just thought, you know, coming on the heels of the way this season has started for Darvish, a very good thing to see and quotes to read. Interesting that he and Quintana seem to be testing out this strategy of let's pitch really good against the Brewers, but not so much against everybody else. I don't hate it, right? But, yeah. You know, obviously you'd, you know, you'll hope to see them have similar success against teams that aren't just from Milwaukee. But, you know, a very positive start for Darvish, a very good start for Darvish. The crowd was behind him at Wrigley Field. We were getting, you know, extended you chance. So just a very positive day all around for a situation that, you know, hasn't been great to start the season.
Right. And Darvish will pitch again against Colorado this upcoming Wednesday. You can buy those tickets through SeatGeek. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there's a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you to the action for a great value. I have SeatGeek on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I actually will be going to Wrigley Field here towards the end of the month, and I got my tickets through SeatGeek. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase comes fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals in every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, our listeners, you get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code CUBSRELATED today. That's promo code CUBSRELATED for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. And just to finish off those Darvish quotes, that's a great example of why I think Madden somehow doesn't get the credit that I think he really does deserve. He gets the best out of his players, and this is a great example, especially when you have some folks in the media come out and just question your mental fortitude. It's bizarre. And for Madden to come out and explicitly shut down the notion that Darvish cannot compete in high-leverage situations was great to see. And again, I keep saying this, I don't have concerns about Darvish going forward. The only concern we would have with this guy is if he were unhealthy, and he's not. He's healthy. He's throwing bullets. He's throwing amazing sliders, curveballs, changeups, everything. So good to see going forward. Just to wrap up there, I also want to mention that I think overall, the way this is going, the Cubs right now are in a very favorable situation with their entire pitching staff here. And it's not just the fact that Darvish is getting things together as well, but when we look at Tyler Chatwood, and the walks need to come down, but this is a complete staff. It's a complete staff. Mm-hmm. We have not had a complete staff here, Corey, at any era of the Theo Epstein reign, so to speak. Even in 2016, there were still some iffy things at the bottom of the rotation with the number five.
Wow, really throwing John Lackey under the bus here.
Well, a little bit, yeah. And even then, John Lackey was your four starter in those playoffs, and he had an okay year and everything. But that when you go from Brett Anderson to Tyler Chatwood, and you see the difference in quality of stuff, and you can look at the entire complete picture of where this pitching staff is at, this is why going into the season that Theo was being asked, hey, Theo, is this staff better than 2016, one of the best staffs in Chicago Cubs history? There's validity to that notion, to that thought, that this staff can be better. So I just want to wrap up this entire talk with pointing that out, that now they're getting on the right track, and we could see kind of what we all expected going into the year.
Well, and I really don't think you can say it enough. I think it's one of those things that really bears repeating. You had a team on an 8-game winning streak come in and get shut out 3 of 4 games and only score 2 in the other one,
yeah.
One of which wasn't earned. So it's I really don't think you can say enough about the starting staff and the job that the bullpen did. The bullpen continues, again, to be a major asset for this team. And, you know, the one earned run that Steve Cishek gave up, he threw 3 strikes in a 4-pitch walk. You can go look at the game day. We tweeted it.
Yeah, it was absurd.
At Real Cubs Insider
absurd.
Handle. It was ridiculous. I mean, these weren't borderline pitches. I mean, he walked Eric Sogard. 3 of the 4 pitches were, you know, over the middle of the plate. So, you know, they barely even deserve to give up that run is the point. But, you know, you had a really strong series from Carl Edwards, Brandon Morrow, Brian Dunsing, Steve Cishek, you know, basically everybody. I think Justin Wilson might have been the only reliever that doesn't get in there.
I think we're fine with that.
Oh, no, Montgomery, Farrell, and Wilson,
yeah,
don't get in there. But the other guys, very good, you know, and I know we mentioned it before, but I'm not getting tired of Brandon Morrow. He's just filthy.
Yeah.
Absolutely filthy. Carl Edwards Jr. continues to be strong, striking out people in rapid succession. So, yeah, really worth repeating over and over again that this pitching staff was really good. And if this pitching staff is anything close to this, obviously I'm not expecting them to shut people out 3 out of every 4 days. But if this staff can keep this going, you know, 6 or 7 innings, limiting damage, limiting hard contact, letting the defense do the job behind them, you know, we really could see them kick into a real 2016-like run
right,
here.
Because
we've obviously seen the offense so far, not in this series necessarily, but we've, you know, several games, a lot of the games so far this year, they've, you know, busted the door open, you know, scoring, you know, 6, 7, 8 plus runs. Get it all going together, right? Which is, you know, basically what was the formula for success in 2016 is, you know, just dominating in all facets of the game. And I think this team really has an opportunity to do that. Like we discussed, going to be an interesting, you know, time going forward here and exactly how Joe gets this lineup going and how exactly he's going to structure it and who's playing when. But, you know, the Cubs right now are 15-10, 5 games over, which is a season high. And that is with Anthony Rizzo's OPS right now is .472. And Wilson Contreras is .777.
Yeah, it's
going to go up. Obviously, those numbers not the same. Not to, you know, act like Contreras has been as poor at the plate as Rizzo has been, but those are both numbers that I would be comfortable going out on a limb, Brendan, and saying they'll be better come the end of the season. So for the Cubs to be playing this well, especially after that kind of, you know, sloppy start out of the gate, like you said, they're going to hopefully. I mean, I guess we don't know, right, with Chicago weather and the rest of this country and, you know, how the weather has been so far. But ideally, they're not playing in the snow anymore. They don't need to be wearing those ski masks, you know, and we're not dealing with rain every other day. So I would expect that, you know, that'll be very good for this offense and, you know, a couple of the players in this offense who, you know, just haven't gotten it clicking yet. But I think for the Cubs to be where they are right now, with the way the season started, it bodes really well. And you know, they're on a little bit of a run here, and I, you know, don't really see any signs of it stopping.
The Cubs will welcome the Colorado Rockies in tomorrow for a Monday game set. They're going to play three. Tomorrow's game starts at 6:05 p.m. Central Time. And we have John Lester on the mound for the Cubs, 2-1, 3.29 ERA. We have Kyle Freeland on the mound for the Rockies. Freeland, a 24-year-old left-hander this year, has a 4.33 ERA, 4.96 FIP. A guy who doesn't really get many whiffs. He's about league average in whiffs. Command, he's worse than league average. His base on ball per nine is 3.67. And then the Cubs will face John Gray, whom they saw the previous series. And Gray, as we know, is 2-4, 5.79 ERA. Has an electric fastball. He was in the same draft as Chris Bryant, the pick after Chris Bryant. And Kyle Hendricks, 2-1, 3.10 ERA. We saw him perform very well his last time out. And that game will start at 7:05 p.m. Central Time. And then they'll finish off the Wednesday game as an afternoon game, 1:20 p.m. Central Time. Tyler Anderson, who pitched very well against the Cubs last week, will face Yu Darvish. Yu Darvish, 0-2, 6.86 ERA. Tyler Anderson, 1-0, 4.10 ERA. And since we're going to be doing this with the weather and trying to check in whether that's going to rain or snow, I am going to give weather forecast here on out. So Monday, believe it or not, 72 degrees in Chicago, no chance of rain, very little cloud coverage. Actually, Corey, believe it or not, it's going to be warmer in Chicago than it will be in Los Angeles here tomorrow. So quite a reverse of what we've seen. And then on the Tuesday game, it's going to be 75 degrees. It's really warming up in Chicago. There'll be a windy day that day, apparently. And then Wednesday, 72 degrees, a 20% chance of rain, mostly cloud coverage, but a good chance to get that in. You never know Chicago weather. These forecasts can change. But it looks like, for the most part, the Cubs will get all three of these games in, and they'll have an off day on Thursday before they travel to St. Louis. Corey, what are you looking for this series?
Well, I'm getting a little worried that you're going to leave me for NBC or something like that as a budding weatherman. You'd have to change your name, though, to something, you know, more like a weather pun. I don't think you'd be able to go with Brendan Miller anymore. But just keep things going. Look, we've been hoping for consistency all year, and I think we're finally getting it in the overall quality of their play here. Coming off, you know, a tough road trip, all things considered, not in the results, but just in where they were going and the teams they were playing. You know, a successful road trip with Colorado and Cleveland. You come home, you dominate a division rival in the Milwaukee Brewers, really shut them up for, you know, how they were feeling and the way that, you know, they were acting and talking. And just keep it going. You know, again, Colorado, a tough team, and it will be interesting. I don't anticipate any theatrics, but I would say things get a little interesting if anybody happens to get hit. But yeah, just keep things going. I mean, if you're going to point to one thing, we already mentioned it, but you know, you just want to see Anthony Rizzo get going here. I'm not worried that it's going to happen, but it hurts my heart, Brendan, to see him with a 157 batting average, yeah, and an OPS under 500. Yeah. So really, that's all I would say. I'm not sure what more you can ask of this team right now, because the hallmark of good teams is winning games like this. And this was a close series with the Brewers. Not a lot of runs were scored. And those little battles were what won some of these games. You know, the Cubs forcing those extra throws and taking those extra runs and, you know, making those key plays on defense that the Brewers weren't able to make. And that was just good to see. And again, that's the hallmark of teams that win a lot of games. And that's how you end up with those high win totals, is playing clean, and being the team to make the effort and do the little things to win those 1-2 run games against divisional opponents. So I was very pleased and impressed with the way this team played this weekend, and I would just like to keep that going against Colorado.
My one last thought here before we sign off, I want to see how Joe will utilize his bullpen this series, just because Morrow is so heavily used, and he's already made, what is it, 11 appearances, right? So in 25 games, he's pitched in a little under half, so he's on pace for about 70 innings this year. I don't know. He only threw 43 last year. He has an extensive injury history. I think ideally it'd be nice to have him maybe, you know, sit for a day or two, just get things a little bit relaxed here before they head to St. Louis. So I think if there's one trend in addition to Rizzo, in addition to KB, it will be worth looking into how Joe will utilize his bullpen and whether or not he gives Carl a few safe opportunities or Strope if the opportunity does arise.
Yeah, and Morrow, they're already being careful with him, Brendan. He could have pitched in that game on Saturday, the Cubs winning 3-0 at, you know, you could have seen him enter that game and try to lock things down, but, you know, the Cubs being mindful of his usage, and obviously, you know, as we mentioned, this bullpen has been very strong, so they're able to trust in that game, you know, Strope, Dunsing, and Cishek to lock down the shutout for Jose Quintana, and that's exactly what they did with, you know, very, very little concern there, those three not allowing any hits or any walks. So when you have a closer that you're trying to be mindful of his usage, that's a very good thing. I can guarantee you that Joe Maddon and Jim Hickey were very pleased with their bullpen on Saturday and on the whole. But with that, this has been the Cubs-related podcast presented by CubsInsider.com. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio. As always, if we are not on a platform that you prefer to get and listen to your podcast, please let us know. We will try to rectify that. If you would be so kind on whatever app you are using, preferably iTunes, to leave us a 5-star review and a comment as to why you enjoy the show, we would appreciate that very much. If you have questions, concerns, suggestions, feedback, negative or positive, we do appreciate that, and we try to incorporate it into the show if we can. But until then, we will talk to you after the Cubs and Rockies finish up their series. Thanks for listening.